This podcast is being recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge their ongoing connection to land, waters, and culture. Colonization and genocide are ongoing processes that continue to this day. Sovereignty was never ceded. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
It's time for Men and the Dunce. Men and the Dunce.
Hey, hey, and welcome back to episode 2 of our short-run snack pod dank meme Marxism theory series.
A palooza.
Thank you. Yeah. We thought of a couple of names for this series, and none of them really stuck, so I'm just kind of doing them all together.
I think Noon and the Dunce is a great
Noon
name.
Noon and the Dunce. And it does kind of roll off the tongue, even though I feel uncomfortable about it.
It definitely rolls off the tongue, and I'm pretty sure that the snack potters love it, so You might just have to live with
all
it.
All right. Well, this is episode 2, Dank Economics and Abstract Coats. And Zach, do you want to explain our first meme?
All right, here's the first meme. Did we say that we said, like, this is a short run bonus? It's a series of 4, so you should probably listen to the first one.
I didn't say any of that. I figured everyone's going to listen to the first one because it's part 2. But yeah, if you are listening to this and you haven't listened to part 1, go back. It's from last week.
It's a little 4-part series.
Yeah.
All right, here's our first meme. It's another picture of Marx.
Same picture. There's only like 3.
The same picture. Yeah, there seems to be very few pics available of Big Daddy Marx. So it's his head floating in space above what appears to be an illustration of a flat earth. And he says, "Oh, you believe in the labor theory of value, do you? Then why is it that you don't own a coat?"
So, Zach, do you have any idea what's going on here?
I'm more than happy to admit I have no fucking idea what's going on. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to see how Flat Earth ties into it.
Doesn't. I think that's just an aesthetic thing, unfortunately. I mean, maybe.
This podcast is over.
All right, so there's this quote that I wanted to read out from a guy called Robert C. Tucker, who, like, is a Marx scholar and compiled a bunch of books and, like, wrote commentary on it or whatever. And he says, "Marx was one of those thinkers who spend their lives writing a single important book under a number of different titles," which is a good joke, and it's true. And that book was an economics textbook, and the number of different titles can be condensed down to one, which is Capital. And hi, Mum, I believe you're listening to this, and I just know that you're thinking, "Oh, it's called Das Kapital, not Capital." But it's translated into English. You don't say the capital, it's just called Capital, all right? Just so, listeners, if you were ever going to call it the capital to sound smart online, don't.
Don't.
All right. Now, I have not read Capital. I'm not sure anyone really has, but I have read the first, like, 10 to 15 pages a million times, and I've read
introduction.
Advanced Cliff Notes book, an introduction. Yeah. It is very, very dry. But anyway, the subtitle of Marx's Capital is a critique of political economy. And what he's trying to do is basically get rid of idealism in economics. And we talked about idealism last week. And I am going to get back to the coats, but I want you to read our next meme before I get there.
I will. It's a cat looking very sort of patriotic, I suppose. Against a pretty communist background of a yellow star on a red square. And it says, "Birthdays are a form of commodity fetishism created by capitalists to occupy the working classes and prevent revolution." I mean, this is just because you hate birthdays.
No, I actually, in my notes here, I have bad meme, commie cat with impact font. And then I tried to find commodity fetishism memes because commodity fetishism is something that Marx talks about a bunch in the first volume of Capital. And it's a really complicated and interesting idea that is completely ruined by the colloquial use of the word fetishism. And this meme was literally the best meme that I could find about it, and it completely gets it wrong. So that's why I've included this meme here. All right. I will get back to the labor theory of value and the coats, but I'm going to go via commodity fetishism, okay?
So all right.
Commodity fetishism is when you ascribe things to commodities that aren't part of them, all right? And so this is a fetish in the sense of like a religious icon or a totem or something, not in the sense of a kink or a turn-on, all right? Mm-hmm. So a religious fetish might be like, there's a, a saint that died near here. I'm going to rub my knee on the saint's grave because the grave has special powers, and then my knee will heal, or something like that, right? So you're ascribing characteristics to this gravestone, like being able to heal you, or something like that, that aren't actually in the gravestone. And
I don't remember telling you about my magic gravestone.
I mean, look, we've all got one, dude. It's nothing special.
Okay. I was wondering how you got such strong knees.
You did used to compliment my calves a lot.
They look good.
Thanks. Okay, so with commodity fetishism, the main thing that Marx thinks that we ascribe to the commodities that aren't actually there is value, all right? And this seems kind of weird, and I will explain it more, but it's thinking something like, this iPhone is worth $600. I'm going to pay $600 because that's what the phone is worth. There's this like $600 value inherent in this object. And probably a lot of people listening are like, wait, that's not a fetish. That's just what a phone costs. What are you talking about? There's no fetish there. I pay $600 because that's what a phone costs, all right? But Marx says that these categories that economists take for granted, like value or price or whatever, mm-hmm. are actually kind of metaphysically dodgy, and that they have an important backstory that leads up to them being these, like, obviously it's just worth that or whatever. And Capital is his attempt to like unpick all of these assumptions and really get to the like behind the scenes story of where these economic categories like value come from.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Marx subscribed to the labor theory of value, which was mentioned in our first meme. And sort of oddly, that was the default view. I will explain what it is, by the way, but I'm giving some history here. That was the default view of economists when he was writing. And so Adam Smith, who's a famous capitalist nerd, hard-on icon, also was a labor theory value dude. And so was a guy called Ricardo, and like all the economists were labor theory people. But nowadays, basically no mainstream economists subscribe to it. And they all subscribe to the marginal utility theory of value, which I'm not going to explain because it's not communist and it's wrong and it's not fun. So we're going to talk about the labor theory of value. Neoclassicals, right. Flame me in the comments.
So labor theory of value sounds to me like the theory that an object or commodity is given its value by the amount of labor that went into its production. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly it. And it's important to distinguish between two things, the use value and the exchange value. And these two things exist kind of separately from one another. The use value is the thing that you actually get out of a good. So like I'm sitting on a chair right now. That's the use value of this chair, right? Is to be sat on. The use value of a sandwich is to be eaten, whatever. And the exchange value is the price that you get from selling that item, right? Mm. So these two things, like we can kind of instinctively see like, yeah, those are both a type of value and they don't seem to have necessarily a strong relationship with one another, right? Mm. And one example for that is that like we all need water to survive, but water's dirt cheap, right? So that the use value is extremely high, but the exchange value is not very high. Okay.
And you might find the inverse relationship with something like high end luxury items.
Absolutely.
For
yes.
example. And there's an interesting, I know I haven't gotten into it, but I know that there is interesting conversation around art given the in this kind of economic context, but
totally.
Probably getting off track.
I think I do mention that at some point, but
cool.
We'll see
I'm interested to hear what you have to say.
Yeah. Okay. So Marx is really interested in these two different types of value, and he talks a lot at great length about exchange value. And he thinks that it's really not obvious that if you buy a certain amount of eggs and then you trade them for one coat, then you also need to get one coat's worth of beer if you trade the eggs for beer instead. Okay, sorry, that's a bit confusing. But like, if the eggs are worth more in beer than they are in coats, then you can like just make an infinite amount of profit by buying eggs for beer and then selling them for coats or whatever, right? And so we have this, he calls like the universal standard or something, the universal exchange? Forgotten the term, I'm sorry. That's bad Marxism nerdism. But like the...
Now who's the dunce?
Dollars, right? Like currency has stood in to make sure that $100 worth of eggs is also worth $100 worth of coat. Anyway, this is where that first meme, that coat thing, comes from. Then how come you don't own a coat? Because a coat is an example that he uses, like, constantly for, like, hundreds and hundreds of pages of being like, and the value of 6 coats in eggs, whatever. Yeah.
Does he just really love coats? I mean, I guess if you lived in Europe, like, you're pretty attached to your coat.
Yeah.
It's pretty important to your existence. I mean, I love a good coat. Who doesn't love a good coat?
Well, one of the things that I love about this meme is that it doesn't, like, everyone has a coat. And also, like, whether or not you do doesn't have any commitment to anything about Marxism. And, like, he could have done it fine without mentioning coats. But, like, it's a good deep cut capital reference. And that's why the meme is so good. Yeah. And so these two types of value, exchange value and use value, I've been using the words goods and commodities pretty interchangeably, and I'm going to define a commodity now, and you basically don't need to worry about it, but I just want to clarify. A commodity is a good produced primarily for exchange. Okay. So when a bakery bakes bread, it's there to be sold, even though people are going to eat it, it's a commodity. When I bake sourdough at home, it's not a commodity. I'm only making it for its use value, not its exchange value. So it's a good, but it's not a commodity.
Mm. And when I make sourdough, it doesn't get sold or eaten. It goes in the bin.
Mm-hmm.
So that's I've invented a whole new third category of
non-value.
Really existing object. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I guess really it's art, what I've just made there.
Yeah. Somewhat unsuccessful art. All right. So labor theory of value. Workers do particular concrete acts of labor, like making a coffee or baking bread or carpenting a house or whatever, and these create goods and services and use value, right? And so far, Marx is basically agreeing with his contemporary economists, but this is where the critique comes in, right? So the other economists say a certain amount of work makes a certain amount of value, and then that coffee has that value sort of in it. And people talk about the labor substance of, like, labor has been, like, smooshed into a commodity and now it's in that or whatever, right? And this is the commodity fetishism. And there's this phrase that I really like that Marx uses, the spectral objectivity of value, right? That this value appears to be objective, right? It appears to be fundamentally in this object. It's not a idea that phone is worth $600, right? But that value is actually spectral, right? It's
it's actually kind of abstract and made up of a whole bunch of pre-existing assumptions. Just to use one example, like, what is the value of the labor in the first place is, like, a necessary part of that equation that you might not necessarily see in the final price.
Totally.
Or you might not think about.
So what Marx says is that what's actually happening when workers are doing concrete acts of labor, I feel like we missed a meme here. Yeah. Actually, can you read the next meme before I go on?
Okay. It's this
yet
is,
again, that same photo of Marx.
The same photo of Marx, but this time is done up to look like the Joker, I believe.
Yeah.
I'm a bit colorblind, but I'm assuming his hair is green.
It is, yeah.
And he's got the Joker clown makeup on. And he says, "We live in a society in which individual acts of differentiated labor are recognized through commodity exchange as fractions of abstract social labor."
Yeah, nice.
Catchy meme.
It is, yeah. It's also a good bottom text one. We live in a society in which... Yeah. All right, so there are these two different things going on. There's the concrete acts of labor and these abstract social labor, which the meme mentions, right? The individual concrete acts, and then this abstract social labor. And so what Marx is saying is that while they're doing this act of, like, making this coffee or baking this bread or whatever, there's also a different process of average socially necessary labor going on, okay? And so the idea here is there are two baristas, and one makes coffee a bit faster than the other, all right? So one of them makes maybe 5% more coffees an hour. But they're both being paid the same wage, which means, on average, the faster coffee maker is being paid less per coffee, right? Their coffees actually appear to be worth less in this situation, right? Because they're being... Right, on average, each coffee has less value in them or less labor in them or whatever.
Gotcha.
But because they're both being... the coffees are both being sold as commodities, these individual acts of concrete labor are kind of averaged out, right? And so we have this average amount of time that you have to make a coffee, or the average amount of labor that you need to build a house or whatever. And so these individual acts of differentiated labor, the individual baristas making individual coffees, are then recognized through commodity exchange, right? When they're sold, there's like, this coffee's worth $4, that coffee's worth $4. So these individual concrete acts are then recognized as fractions of abstract social labor. Does that make sense? I completely lost you. You're blinking a bit.
Let me see if I can say it back to you.
Yeah,
so
perfect.
Basically, yeah, well, I guess it's, he is saying that the labor value of a particular object is not actually about the literal amount of labor that went into it, but actually about what we have collectively decided is roughly the amount of labor required to create that object.
Absolutely. You got it perfectly. That's great. That's so good.
Okay, cool.
And you explained it much more clearly than I did. And there's just one extra layer of this, which I kind of alluded to, but I want to sort of reinforce, is that the value of the good isn't in that commodity itself, right? It's subjectively determined by this interpersonal and social process of commodity exchange, right? Where a bunch of people all come together and in aggregate, we, like in a market or whatever, decide, yes, this is how much average socially necessary labor time a coffee is made of. And that's how the price of a coffee is determined. All right?
Yeah, this is interesting and new to me. So,
This is really the kind of dank stuff and the complex theory that I really wanted to explain, rather than the like, oh, rich people bad stuff.
Yeah, this is, and I see how this is kind of building towards the idea of a commodity's value being spectral, in the sense that it's actually this, as you describe it, a kind of generalized social collective decision that has been made, as opposed to any kind of measurable or objective or even standardized value that we place on the labor necessary to create that commodity.
And there's,
so, which I guess, you know, it's this, as you said before, it's this kind of unpicking of the idea of like economics as these like natural laws that are unshakable, and a reframing of them as deeply ideological and philosophical concepts, which are very much created by humans, that they're not,
totally.
They don't naturally occur and they're not immutable.
Mm. Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I think that's really the whole point about the critique of political economy as opposed to being a contribution to political economy is he's being like, whoa, 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 you guys are just treating this whole commodity exchange and like selling your labor or whatever as like a normal human thing that just like happens when humans are around or whatever. And that's not the case. It's socially and historically constructed. Yeah.
This is why, and it's good to talk about this because I think that I already agreed with the conclusion that we've come to here, which is that economic relationships are completely confected, essentially, and they don't naturally occur. And that's why when we see tweets from people like at the IPA, for example, who talk about, who basically complain that when they say something that they consider to be like an evident economic truth, they're like, why are you criticizing for me for saying this? All I'm doing is observing the science.
Totally,
because
totally.
Economics is this objectively, like, it's a thing that exists and we just observe it and observe the natural laws of the market. So it's not my fault that I have observed something about it that you don't like. Like, that's their...
Totally.
That's the way they come in. So I definitely would see tweets like that and think to myself, you're fucking... you've got this so wrong.
Mm.
But it's interesting to get a little bit of the theory behind, or I guess understand a little bit more specifically exactly how that creation of the myth of economic value happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's so much good stuff here and the conceptual tools more even than the conclusions of being like, hold on, let's look at stuff that appears to be objective and realize that it's collectively constructed or whatever. And I think it's also important to note that, like, you know, people, especially lefties, will be like, oh, that's a social construct or whatever. And people often see that as meaning this is fake or this doesn't exist or something. And Marx and I are both very clear that, like, clearly the spectral objective value does exist. Like, there are prices on things and, like, that coffee is actually worth $4 in some way. Like, we're not... I'm not denying that. But there's a history to that that appears to not exist and that gets flattened in our kind of, like, what we're taught as normal.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's an important distinction to make for when you're discussing any kind of social structure, especially if you're trying to describe the way in which it might marginalize or oppress particular people. For example, if you're trying to deconstruct the concept of patriarchy and explain, no, this isn't just like a natural law. This is something that is being enforced and perpetuated by our society. And so, but at the same time, it has very real consequences. Just because it is constructed doesn't mean that it isn't real.
Totally.
And that's like, yeah, like that's an important distinction, I think.
Just to sum up, two types of value. There's use value, which is created by individual concrete acts of labor, and exchange value, which is, inverted commas, created by abstract socially necessary labor. All right? So this is one half of labor theory, which is where does the value come from? And next time we're going to look at where does the value go? And this is the dark side of Marxist theory, class, exploitation, and bloody revolution.
All right. I'm genuinely excited to see more memes and learn more things.
Fuck yeah. All right.
Thanks,
thank
dude.
You, listeners. Thank you, Zach.
Yeah, you bet. Take it easy, and we'll catch you. Well, we'll see you this weekend for our regular episode, and then next week for the next in our short-run Marxist meme series.
All right.
Take it easy.